Okay, so preparing for Pesach with the coronavirus. So as I don't know, when my father caught on to the double entendre, or maybe triple meaning in the topic, meaning one could be preparing for Pesach with the coronavirus. There's the general issue of the various stringencies in the air that have to do with the issue of the coronavirus. And then finally, there is the potential of having the problem over Pesach itself. So try to deal with all of those possibilities. This is sort of the list of things that came to my head, as well as looking around at seeing what some of the conversation was amongst the rabbinic chat groups and stuff that I'm a part of, what questions people are raising, what issues people are raising. And if there's details and stuff that come along, so please pass it along, and we'll try to resolve as many issues as we can. And again, if we're not able to resolve it tonight, so I'll try to get back to you, or maybe, or even to the entire group, as we head and get closer to Pesach. So the first issue, may have noticed, is that the idea of mechiras chametz is selling our chametz is going to be different this year. So there's two aspects that is different. One is on your end, and then the second one is going to be on my end. So generally, we require, and not necessarily require, but we try to get something called a kinyan. We try to create, we will do a kinyan chalipin, where I'll give you something of value, either sometimes my phone or a set of keys, a pen, a handkerchief traditionally, and then you lift it to sort of demonstrate that we have, that you mean it, that this is a kinyan, that this is something that you're agreeing to, and that we're set to go. Now, again, with my relationship with you is not, I'm not buying your chametz. I think I go through this with a lot of you every year, right? Within 2 weeks to go before Pesach, I'm generally not interested in buying hordes of chametz from people. Rather, what we're doing is you're appointing me as your agent to go ahead and sell the chametz on your behalf, which I every year do on Erev Pesach to our commissioner, to Rick Churchill. So what are we doing with regards to that kinyan that's taking place, that's being handed from one to another? You're demonstrating serious. You're demonstrating that the idea that I agree that this is something that we're that they're doing. I absolutely want you to sell the chametz, and it adds a level to what we are doing here. So already, weeks ago, Poskim came out and said that we can't really do that this year. In fact, I know of one yeshiva where they knew that they were going to be closing down shortly, and the Rosh Yeshiva said, all right, everybody, let me do a Kabbalah's Kinyan with you in order to sell your chametz, and all the boys lined up in order to sell the chametz, and then it turned out that Rosh Yeshiva started developing symptoms a couple of days later after handing back and forth a pen with every boy in the yeshiva. So I don't know what the outcome of that was, but we're going to avoid personal contact this year, as unfortunate as that is. So that's why we sent out this online form for everybody to fill out. I saw we had a few additions today. If you don't have the link is was sent out in an email today. It's available on WhatsApp. It's being sent around. Feel free, if anybody has it and needs it from someone else, so anybody could forward that link around. It's not attached to any particular place that it was sent from. I actually am not intending, I told Mr. Churchill last night that I don't intend on meeting with him last night. I don't intend on meeting with him this year, I told him last night, to which he kind of seemed to breathe a sigh of relief. Rather, it's going to be done with Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig is going to take care of it on behalf of probably 200 shuls on the East Coast for this year, with perhaps the most famous chametz buyer in the world, Mr. John Brown. So rather than your chametz being owned by Rick Churchill this year, it's going to be owned by John Brown. In terms of what you need to do differently, not much. You don't need to do anything differently. We're not going to do that kinyan and meet up in that way. And for those of you that have signs, like I do in my house, that say property of Rick Churchill, so this year you'll need different signs. You'll have to put things up that say property of John Brown. Now, we'll mention one more thing and then get into a important rule that we're going to use to guide us tonight. The second issue is that some people have the custom of attempting not to sell chametz gamur, not to sell full chametz, meaning not to rely on this sale for things that are absolute chametz, an absolute mixture of flour of some type and water, only to use it for kitnios, or only to use it for things that are not full chametz, etc. So there are some who said for this year they don't want to do that. First of all, there's a little bit of a nervousness of not having of not having chametz after Pesach is over. Meaning, is there a guarantee that there's going to be bread? Is there a guarantee? So maybe a person is not going to be so interested in selling their chametz gummer. So does a person have the right to say, although every year I have the stringency of not selling chametz gummer, this year I'm not going to keep that stringency? Does a person have a right to say that? So most, from what I could tell, Foskin that I've talked to, Rav Schechter is on the record as saying that absolutely a person has the right to say that this year I'm going to rely on the leniency of selling my full chametz, even though other years I may not have relied on such. Why is that? It's a chumrah, and I have the right to be, it's a stringency, and we're not going to be strict on that stringency this year, as it is a bit of, is going to be a difficult Pesach. Now, there is a detail, some may recall, a couple of months ago, before last summer, Rabbi Donnie Pransky was in our shul for Shabbos, and he gave a shiur between Mincha and Ma'ariv on Shabbos about annulling one's vows, about if a person has a certain minhag tov, a person has a certain custom that they have, a chumrah that they've become accustomed to do, a person does not have the right to back out on that custom just because they feel like it. Rather, if a person's going to back out on that custom, they have to do hataras nedarim. They have to do a release of vows, an explicit release of vows. That's what it mentioned. That's halacha that's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. So does that mean that if I'm not going to keep that stringency of not selling my chametz, of not selling chametz gamor, and now this year I'm going to be lenient about that, do I then have to do hataras nedarim? So Rav Schechter said, no, you don't. Why not? So there is a Dagol Meravava that Rabbi Pransky quoted during that shir as well, who says that if you normally keep a stringency and something came up this year, the example in Shulchan Aruch is a person always fasts every Monday and Thursday or something, and all of a sudden this year something came up that he's not going to be able to fast on that day, but you immediately intend to go back to that stringency, that does not require Hataras Nedarim. You're maintaining the stringency with the recognition that it was always a chumrah. And when I have the need to relax on that chumrah, I have the right to be able to. So for several of the things that we're going to talk about tonight that we might mention, you know, although most years we might be very strict on this, this year it might make sense to be lenient on it, to say, all right, well, I'm going to be lenient this year, so that would not require hataras nedarim. That would not require any type of annulment of vows. It's just understood that this year is going to be different than all other years. So that's the issue of the technical mechiras chametz. Somebody asked me today, and this might be a situation for several people here, of they all of a sudden had to leave their office one day, a couple of now weeks ago already, and they left whatever it is in their office, assuming that they would go back and clean it out before Pesach. And now it's become clear that we're not going to be able to go back and clean it out before Pesach. So what happens to that chametz? So the answer is to sell it, to include it in your mechira, to include it in your sale, that space where the chametz is. I own chametz that's in my office at X, and that should be included. There is a slot on the chametz form to fill out, and we recommend you do that. With regards to, I'm keeping an eye here, if anybody, again, has any questions, you can feel free to put it into the Zoom group chat that is available, at least on my screen. As we move to cleaning the house, so every year when it comes to cleaning the house for Pesach, so there's always two halachos. There's the din of cleaning for Pesach, and there is the din of, well, I'm cleaning for Pesach already, chaval that I'm not going to make everything neater, I'm not going to clean things out, I'm gonna pull out the couches and make sure that we sweep all the dust behind, all of those things that go into a solid cleaning that we often do before Pesach. So a lot of that is not required for Pesach. A lot of that is, what is required for Pesach is really going around the house, opening the drawers, and making sure that there's no chametz in there. Now, once you open the drawer and see that it's a mess, or see all these things that, oh, I really should get rid of some of these things, so then it gets into cleaning things out. But really, the only thing that is required is going around and making sure that there's no chametz around the house. It does not require any special cleaning. Now, I would go even further and say that for many of us, even if we are home every year, we might be home with a much smaller crew than we are in other years. Meaning, usually the house is filled, every bedroom is filled with somebody, in which case every bedroom needs to be cleaned out before Pesach. Potentially this year, if a person doesn't even want to go into those rooms, so what they could do is just close those doors. Meaning, if a person has four bedrooms, but it's only them and their spouse staying in the house, and the other bedrooms are going to be empty, you can close the door to those rooms. Potentially put a little tape on it, put a siman on it, put a sign on the door saying we're not to go into this room. All chametz in this room was sold over the course of Pesach. And just close those doors for Pesach and don't even have to go in. What if I need something from that room? So in the past, Rick Churchill, I've always raised this issue with him when doing the Mechira with him. I understand that Rabbi Willig has a similar agreement with Mr. Brown, that if somebody needs something, so Mr. Brown is very lenient. He's okay with somebody going into the room and getting a non-chametz item. Now, the chametz belongs to him, but the jackets and whatever notebook or whatever else a person might need to get from that room, so that still belongs to you. And Mr. Brown is okay with you going into those rooms and getting something from there. So that is the house in general. So although it is a very intimidating thing to think about cleaning the entire house, especially if a person isn't feeling well, so that hopefully loosens things up. But you really just need to clear out the space where you're going to be from chametz that would be seen. That's really what is required in terms of preparing the general house before we head into the kitchen. Okay, so that is that's the house. Next, preparing the kitchen. So the kitchen is a little more complicated. First of all, you're for sure going to be there over the course of Pesach. And second of all, there's parts of it that you're going to need to use over the course of Pesach. So this is not a full koshering shear. We've given those in the past. So if a person hasn't made Pesach in the past, you might need to refer to some of those shear. But just in terms of the general, what might be different for this year, first of all, Rav Schechter was asked in one of the conference calls that he's been on, would you be okay with a person koshering part of the burner before Pesach? Meaning if a person wants to cook a little bit before Pesach starts, and maybe they're nervous that they're not going to be able to prepare appropriately for Pesach as it gets closer. So can a person cook a little bit before koshering the entire room for Pesach? Meaning, what would that entail? Taking out your Pesach pot, koshering one of the burners, and using that burner to prepare a big thing of soup for the duration of Pesach. So he felt, yes, he thought that would be okay. While under normal circumstances, you might be very nervous about potentially mixing things together. That, you know, Jews are careful, and under the circumstances, they'll be careful about that. So if a person wants to kosher a small part of their kitchen prior to koshering the rest of it, that's something that one can do. I would also say that, especially if you're planning a smaller Pesach than usual, you don't necessarily need to kosher everything in the kitchen. If a person has multiple ovens, so you don't need to kosher all the ovens. Now, if you're going to use it for milk and meat, you might want to, and could be it's better than the alternative. But it could be that there might be things that on a normal year, everything, the entire kitchen becomes kosher l'Pesach. This year, maybe it won't. So, for example, a counter. So if a person has a lot of counter space, but to do what we normally do for counters, which is pouring the hot water on it, that's a time-consuming and messy job, and a person is nervous about doing that, or the job of covering a counter covering all the counters is something that can normally take a significant amount of time, and the person doesn't have the energy and perhaps doesn't have the need to put in all of that time, a person could cover up a small part of the counter, and that's the space that they're going to use for the duration of Pesach. Or kasher a small part of the counter, and that's going to be the part that, and the only part that a person is going to use for the duration of Pesach. Now, to what about if something extends beyond there? So, one thing to keep in mind with counters is that they don't necessarily, assuming everything is cold and everything is dry and everything is clean, it doesn't necessarily need to be kosher for Pesach like we often think. I just saw that there's a comment there. Oh. Like we often think about. You could have a space that's open from the rest of the year. It's wiped down so that you don't see any chametz there. And if you want to put something down there, especially if it's in a bag or something, so there's nothing wrong with doing that on Pesach. You know, the smaller amount of people that there are in the house, the less potential is for there to be any significant mess ups. And that's something that perhaps can make things easier when it comes to kashering the kitchen. Very quickly, kashering kalim. So we have sent out instructions in the past. We'll try to do it again with regards to kashering kalim, what is required. The hardest part about kashering kalim is really that everything should be, one should wait 24 hours. There should be a 24-hour non-use time before you go ahead and kasher. So that is that's often a difficult thing. Perhaps Moshe Shabbos is often the best time to kasher because you have that 24-hour time that is already built in, which kind of works out for this year as well. So it needs to be a 24-hour time. And then you go ahead and kashering quickly for the oven. The oven should be cleaned out as much as possible. Often, this is a breath-breaking part. How makbid does one have to be that every single speck is cleaned out of an oven? In truth, not so makvid. A person should do their best. Any loose pieces should be cleared out. If a person is successful in spreading soap throughout the oven, that really is sufficient, more than making sure you use the elbow grease to get rid of every single crumb. You should try to do that, but under the circumstances this year, one would have the right to be makel on that. If you have a self-cleaning oven, so perfect, turn on the self-cleaning cycle and let it run through, and that's going to be kashered. With regards to the stove, if you have grates, if you have grates and a self-cleaning oven, take the grates, put in the self-cleaning oven, let it go through the cycle. If you don't, so then ideally that should be covered. The space between the grates ideally should be covered. If you have a glass cooktop that they tell you it's going to break the cooktop if you cover part of it, so then technically you don't really need to cover it. The only caveat being for me is that anything that falls onto that spot should really be disposed of, shouldn't be consumed in any way. Sinks need to be koshered by pouring boiling hot water on the different spots of the sink, including the nozzle itself, anything else around the kitchen that I'm thinking of. Dishwashers. So I was trying to think of topics. I actually listened to a shiur from Rabbi Leibowitz. Ari Leibowitz was ready to be make a lenient on koshering dishwashers for this year if a person needs it. If a person needs it. If a person needs it, generally I'm not into koshering the dishwashers because we generally are machmir on not koshering plastic. However, apparently words going around, one has the right to be lenient this year with regards to koshering plastic and to kosher dishwashers. The way to do it is to run through the cycle three times on heavy duty. One of those times at least should have soap put in. So I realize that's a big cooler for this year. If you need it, you can use it. Anything else with kasher and kalim that people want to? Okay. Next, as we move along, tevilas kalim. Okay. So the tevilas kalim, the idea of bringing new vessels that are used for food, and anything that one purchases from a non-Jew needs to be brought to a mikveh. So this has brought all sorts of issues for this year. I would assume that as one gets closer to Pesach, as of now, the Lower Merion Kelim Mikveh is still open. I understand that a person would be nervous about going there even under these circumstances, if a person wants to. So there was a notice that was sent out about what their procedure is between 1 and, I think, between 1 and 4. There's going to be somebody there to dunk it for you. So you certainly can go ahead and do that. I have three other options for what to do about Tevilas Kelim in the current year. So one of them is that we live, those, I see there are people here that don't all live in Wynwood, but those that live in Wynwood, we have access to streams. Those streams in the area do count as Kelim Mikvos. The easiest spot that I have found, and I regularly tovel in this, I'm hearing some feedback from somebody. If everybody could please mute your speakers. One second here.
Yeah, Rabbi Gross, you should have a way to mute everybody.
Yeah, I'm looking for that way.
Rabbi Gross, if you go over to participating.
Yeah, all right, I'm going to
mute everybody.
I'm going to do that now. There we go. Okay, I think I just muted everyone.
Yeah, I
just muted myself. One second.
Right.
Unmute. Okay. Think I'm there. All right. Okay. So Tefilas Kelim. So option one is to go to the mikvah under their the way that they have it set up. Number two is to use one of the streams in the area, provided that it hasn't rained significantly in the last day. I think one can use the streams in the area, and that's a 100% kosher mikvah for your kelim, that's fine. It's not the easiest thing. I told you the easiest spot is off Manoah Road on the south side towards Philadelphia along Karakung Drive, where they did the construction recently. There is like a nice clearing there where you can go. It's not so, the water's not so deep, so if you have a big pot, it's not going to work there. But if it's just a couple of smaller things, so that's a good spot to go ahead and do Tevilas Kelim. That's fine. The other two more unique options that are available, which we would not recommend in any other year, is as follows. Number one is to sell your Kelim to a non-Jew. I mean, if you already bought something, and now you have it in your house. So one has the right to sell it to a non-Jew and then use it with their permission. So so you could go ahead and do it with your neighbor. In theory, we could sell it like we sell the chametz. The only problem is that people often need these kelim before Pesach, not after, not only once the time of selling the chametz has begun. So there was, I could send out the link with tomorrow's email. There was the Rabbinical Council of America, the Basin of America, sent out a thing today that they're willing to sell Kalim on people's behalf. It's a little more complicated because you sort of have to agree for it to be sold and wait for the sale to happen. So they've arranged, I think, four or five times between now and Pesach that they're going to do a sale of whatever Kalim come in to their list. So I assume it's on the Basin of America website. I have a link to it. I could send it out tomorrow if you want. That's one way of selling Kalim, or simply to go to your neighbor and say, hi, give me a quarter. The Kli is yours. Can I use it for a little while? And they'll say, yes, you hope. Otherwise, they'll get a pot for a quarter. But the assumption is that they'll allow you to use that. The other thing, the fourth possibility is to not accept ownership of it. That you could go to a store and technically and say, hi, here's the money for it, but I am hereby not acquiring this pot until I decide to do so, which could be in a month, 2 months from now. So during that interim, it's still owned by the store. Now, the problem is at this point, if you already bought things, you can't now go back and say, I don't really own this anymore. Once you bought it, you bought it. But if you have not yet, if you have things that one is going to buy in the next 2 weeks before Pesach that requires Tevilas Kelim, one could say, I'm hereby not owning it until I, until this difficult period goes away, and then I'll be able to bring it to a mikveh. I'll be able to bring it to a mikveh at that point. So those are the four Tevilas Kelim options. Ordinarily, we would not rely on the last two. I'm a little uncomfortable even offering them, but I would add in that when it comes to kasher tevilas kelim, I think there's a lenience, there's an idea out there that it is the way it's formulated is that it's a mitzvah's asay, as opposed to, it's not like your vessels are treif until you bring them to a mikveh. They're kosher vessels, there's just a mitzvah to bring them to a mikveh before they're used. And because there is that mitzvah, the Rabbanim came along and said, you're not going to allow you to use them until you bring them to a mikveh. So in the absence of a possibility of bringing it to a mikveh, it could be that the entire knas, it could be the entire reason not to use it, falls away. So you throw that into the mix, there's enough to rely on from those several options to be able to use new vessels, even though one is not yet be able to bring it to a kasher kelim mikveh. Okay, bedikas chametz is next on my list. Bedikas chametz should be done as usual. If a person has, or ordinarily we might say, a person should go and bring to their offices, do bedikas chametz, and we dealt with that earlier. If a person is not able to make it to their office, he can't do bedikas chametz there. Rather, it's going to be part of your sale to via me to John Brown that he's going to purchase all of the chametz in your various offices and stuff that you're not able to get to. The question was raised with regards to kitnius. Now, here's a interesting, this is an interesting thing here. What's the question? So Ashkenazim have the stringency of not eating kitnios, which is beans and other legumes and peas and corn, things like that, over the course of Pesach. So it is known that there are periods in Jewish history where they waived that minhag because it was a difficult time to attain food. So if you look at some of the jelly rings available in the stores, they'll say that they're permissible with the permission because it uses corn syrup, and Rav Yitzchak Chan Inspector said it was okay. Well, Rav Yitzchak Chan Inspector said it was okay during a period of famine in the city of Kovna. So he said, okay, you can have kitnios this year. But in normal circumstances, we would not allow it. So Rav Shechter was asked about this. Should we permit kitnios this year? So he didn't think that there's really such a famine going around that it's going to be impossible to get food to the point that we should be willing to permit kitnios over the course of Pesach. Meaning it's a period, yes, it is a period we might be more lenient about various halachos this year, but only where you have to. If there's no specific reason to be lenient, so then there's no permissibility to do so. So I don't think there's any permissibility to be lenient with kitnios this year. I don't think there's any permissibility to be lenient with egg matzos this year. The next line I have, though, about the chumras of eggs and milk, I reserve the right to change this in case anybody, in case I hear from anybody that they disagree. But we generally in most years have a try to be machmir and purchase all eggs and milk that we can before Pesach, that we're going to need for Pesach before Pesach. This is a old minhag Yisrael. What the reasoning for it is a little bit unclear, but it has to do with that there's a thought that there might be chametz in the somehow in the milk, or some of the vitamins that might have chametz that was added to the milk, or things of that nature. So all things that would be batel, it would be nullified before Pesach, but wouldn't be nullified on Pesach. So therefore, the stringency is to purchase all these things before Pesach. However, now, I think milk is totally available in the stores, but Chava tells me that Giant has no eggs available. And any place that you go that does have eggs is rationing eggs. So it seems to me that one would have the right to be lenient with regards to that halacha about requiring all eggs and milk to be bought before Pesach. If I hear that otherwise, I'll let you know. But it seems to me that if a person finds difficulty getting all the eggs that they need before Pesach, or all the milk that they need before Pesach, so one has the right to be lenient and purchase them on Pesach. And again, as we mentioned before, that would not require hataras nedarim. That would not require an annulment of vows. One more issue with regards to this burning of the chametz right after 11 a.m. So there is a takana. I don't know if there's going to be a communal burning of chametz this year. Maybe they'll develop a system to make that happen. If they do, great. But I've already seen from other communities that they've said we're not going to have a communal burning of chametz this year. Rather, everybody is responsible to dispose of their own chametz. So how should they do so? So then they added in. If the milk says kosher of Pesach, then can't you buy it on Pesach anyways? Yes. Yes. Thanks. I believe, yes, that is correct. But it doesn't always say kosher of Pesach. And I would also add on that with the availability of goods, everything that I've heard, like from the head of the kashrus organizations and stuff, is that all the kosher lePesach stuff has already been made. We don't anticipate any shortage in the amount of kosher lePesach goods available. So I just add the caveat, that's great. I'm just a little... Oh, okay. Full supply of eggs are available at Produce Junction. Okay. I would just add that it doesn't necessarily... Just because the companies have made all their full allotment of kosher lePesach stuff... doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to make it to Philadelphia, right? We're not necessarily the highest on the totem pole in terms of where distribution goes from these kosher companies. So we're assuming everything should be available here, or at least everything that is normally available here will be available here. But we do have the right to be a little bit careful and not so sure that absolutely everything is going to be available here. So burning the chametz. So these other, so I saw from other communities that they said we're not going to do a communal burning of chametz, and therefore, and you should not do your own burning of chametz, right? Rather, what should you do? You should take the chametz and flush it down the toilet. Now, chacham eino v'rosho, a person should keep in mind that if that's the case, you should probably use small pieces of chametz for when you do your bedikas chametz. Meaning, that minug of getting rid of the chametz that one checks, of destroying it, so that should be, if the only way of destroying it is going to be flushing it down the toilet, so then you should make sure they're pretty small in order not to have other problems when it comes to your plumbing on Pesach. If a person has a barbecue and wants to throw them into the barbecue, which they're not going to be using on Pesach anyways, so you could burn, I think you could burn the chametz that way. I think that's a okay thing to do. The reason they're saying not to burn it yourself, David, is because I think you just don't want everyone feeling the need to make their own fires. I mean, we live where we live, and we have like a backyard, a porch, etc. But there are other places where Jews live where they don't necessarily have that amount of space, and for people to all start burning their chametz on their porches in tight confines, I think they wanted to avoid that. So this is sort of one of those examples of low plug. That's just a gezeira across the board. The Rabbanim came out, or really a takana across the board. The Rabbanim came out and said, this year, no burning chametz. I would say, with the exception of if you have a grill, so then you could burn it in the safe confines of your grill. The other thing, and this is an important change for this year, as I've pointed out in years past, I realize not everybody is into this, I don't know, chumrah or stringency. I think that this is necessary me'ikar adin. And that is, many suggest when it comes to selling the chametz that it's what we call in halacha a harama. Harama is like a trickery or a loophole or something like that. Like, oh yeah, you really need to get rid of all your chametz, but instead of getting rid of all your chametz, you're selling it to the non-Jew. So in order to avoid that, Rav Schechter has in one of his articles, and I think this makes the most sense, that you can the mitzvah of burning one's chametz, there's no mitzvah to burn a lot of chametz. Or at least we assume that the main mitzvah of burning one's chametz is to destroy the last stitch of chametz that one owns. I mean, if you have chametz, whatever chametz you have on Erev Pesach, as the time of Pesach is coming, or the time of the prohibition of chametz is coming, that you need to get rid of. That you need to destroy. That's the mitzvah of Bir Chametz. So if a person burns all their chametz at 9 in the morning, and the sale doesn't take place until 10 o'clock in the morning, so what are they doing? They're destroying 10 crumbs of chametz, but they still have a closet full and a pantry full of chametz laying around that's still owned by them, which is then going to be sold. That's a problem. So therefore, what we recommend is to burn, to destroy all of your chametz following only after the chametz is sold. I'll get back to the burning chametz questions in a second. But only to burn one's chametz after, or destroy one's chametz, as the case may be, to only do that after everything is sold. So that's why when I sell the chametz to Rick Churchill, I generally try to do it relatively early than a lot of people do. I mean, the reason why people hold off on selling the chametz to the non-Jew is because there's always that one guy, you'll remain nameless if you're listening to the shiur right now, but there's always that one guy who comes, oh, wait, Rabbi, I didn't, et cetera, and in order to accommodate him, you want to make sure that you get his shtar, you get his agreement before the sale of the chametz. Before the sale of the chametz takes place, so therefore people will push it off a little bit later. I try to do it a little bit earlier in order to accommodate more time to burn the chametz. So generally my sale is around 9:30, 9:45, something like that. And then you have 2 hours to sale the chametz. A person wants to eat some chametz during that time. Mr. Churchill is very accommodating. I understand Mr. Brown is also very accommodating. And they're okay with you maybe having a little bit of their chametz while you for breakfast that morning. However, this year, because Rabbi Willig, who's going to be doing the sale, he's going to be selling chametz for people up and down the East Coast with various time restrictions, the sale is going to be at 11 a.m. The time for burning one's chametz is around 11:35. So I realize that that is a trade-off, but that's what I suggest you do on Erev Pesach. The sale of the chametz will take place at 11 o'clock sharp, I think. Rabbi Willig is a pretty prompt guy. Mr. Brown is a pretty prompt guy. And the window for burning one's chametz will be from 11 to 11:35. If a person is, if you're not able, or I keep saying burning, getting rid of one's chametz would be from 11 to 11:35. So that's what you should do. If you're not able to do it for some reason, you have to go to work or something like that, so then you could, I would say bring it over, but that has its own set of difficulties this year. Try to figure out a way to dispose of one's chametz during that time. I see the questions about burning. So the idea of, I realize it's what you call a minog Yisrael to burn one's chametz, Amy. But the response to that is I say there's no basis for it, but there's little basis for it. The basis for burning one's chametz is that there is an opinion in the Gemara that says that you should burn it. We don't paskin that way. We don't really weigh which way is the best way of disposing of one's chametz. So that's okay. Meaning, even if the person says that it's their minhag, so the rabbanim from across the country have come around to say that it's better that you don't do it this year for the sake of everybody's safety, both in terms of health as well as their fire safety. So that's what they're asking one to do. If a person has an absolute, foolproof, but relatively foolproof way of doing it, then maybe that person has the right to see a fireplace. Okay. A fireplace I could hear being okay. I would add also that while there's a mitzvah to burn one's crumbs, there's not a mitzvah to burn all of the bags and all the other stuff that seems to go along with it. So if a person is going to go ahead and burn it, I'd say either in their fireplace, I guess, would be okay, or their grill. So just put the bread on. Don't worry about all the plastic bags and stuff. That could be thrown away with the garbage. Okay, and that has to do with all of the prohibitions, I think, of Yontif. It's a decent time to pause for a moment. Question, comments, observations, or I'll keep going. Okay, I don't see any movement on the screen, so I'll keep going. Yom Tov and Seder issues. So Siyum Bechorim is a there is still a Tanis Bechoris this year, a fast of the firstborn. Actually, we came across it recently in the Monday night Shulchan Aruch Shir. The idea that we have, what did people used to do for a couple thousand years about the what did firstborns do on Erev Pesach? They fasted. I mean, that is what was commonly done. It was around the time of the Noda B'Yehuda, it seems, that this current custom that we have of people devising ways of getting out of the fast began to develop. So the most common way of resolving that issue today is that we have someone makes a seam on behalf of everybody else. So every year there is this question out there by people who can't make it to Minyan, they're already traveling someplace, what do we do about it? And there is already a kula on the book, a pretty well-utilized leniency of people calling in and listening to the Siyum and partaking that way. So I spoke with the other Rabbi Gross, Rabbi Yitzchak Gross, today, made sure that he's still on cue to do his Siyum this year. He said he is. He's planning on finishing Meseches Yevamos, which is no small feat. And he is okay with doing a Siyum over Zoom. So I think we made up the time being 8 o'clock, which is a little bit later than we have in other years, but I think we'll be okay with that. So 8 a.m. on Erev Pesach, Rabbi Yitzchak Gross will be leading a Siyum in Meseches Yevamos on Zoom. I would say this year is a little bit better than other years, meaning in most years a person, you know, he's making a Siyum for everybody there, and someone calls in, it's kind of like a little bit of a... I don't want to say harama like we did before, but you know it's not so great this year. Where that's the mode of the Siyum, where he's doing it, and everybody is coming together to listen in. So I think that that's appropriate. Certainly, kedai lismoch, worthwhile, you know, worth to enough to rely on to be able to partake of his Siyum over Zoom and to then eat. On the to eat on Erev Pesach. The second issue, Hallel. This is a catch that I don't remember where I saw this, but Hallel. So the minhag in our shul is to do Hallel at davening at Mariv on Seder night. So then you go home and do Hallel at home. So that idea of saying Hallel in shul is only if you have a minyan. I mean, the whole premise of that Hallel is that, oh, we're supposed to say Hallel on Seder night. We should do it with a minyan. So therefore, we're in shul, we'll say Hallel with a minyan. This year, if somehow we are able to all make it back into shul for that night, so that would be wonderful, and that would be quite a joyous Hallel for us to do together. But the way things are looking, that we will not be able to be together that night, we would not say Hallel on our own, right? So you would daven Mariv, a regular Yontif Mariv, and then we would say Hallel at the Seder later on that night. But you would not have the separate Hallel following Mariv that we would do if we would be together in shul. There's been a lot of ruckus over the last, I don't know if people are following the Jewish newspaper scene, but there's been a lot of discussion about doing challah, doing what's it called, doing the Seder over Zoom. So there were a couple of rabbanim in Israel that posted something about having Seders over Zoom. There was some other whispers in this country as well. Rav Schechter actually wrote a tshuva on the topic today. I mean, Rav Schechter actually, and it's really not, I mean, being on Zoom does contain within it various Isurei Derabanan. Every time a person speaks, so that's going to be amplified on the other side. Every time a person moves, that's going to be amplified on the other side. And it does raise the octane, if that's the right word, of electricity in both places. So being on Zoom does contain Isuri Durabanan, and therefore, as difficult as it would be, there is certainly no blanket heter, and really no heter at all to do seders over Zoom. Now, or over any other type of communicative device, the person is not accessible. Now, the one thing that was mentioned, that is, if a person has some sort of severe mental anguish, which I would say would have to fall into the category of being diagnosable. Now, not just that they feel bad, but that there could actually be significant health repercussions to a person being alone. So then there then might be room to be lenient. That's sort of not supposed to be a across the wall heter, but really a at the rabbi's discretion heter. So I would say if anybody feels that they have a significant reason why they would need to do this type of thing, so then you certainly speak with me privately about it. There is room for it. Thank you, Sam, for that comment. I'm not sure they paskened it for Sephardim only, though. I mean I realize it was a Sephardi based in, but I don't think their methodology was necessarily using Sephardic Psak, but your point is granted. But yes, it certainly is Rabbanim that we don't generally Paskin-like, and therefore to Paskin-like them all of a sudden here in this situation is probably not appropriate. Okay, a couple of other things just to knock off. Number one, Matzus Mitzvah. So I don't, as I mentioned before, I don't think there's really any issues with getting regular Shmura Matzah here. If a person does have issues with that, so can they use regular matzah for the Seder? So not such a great option. What makes Shmura Matzah significant is not really that they're not chametz. We assume all of the matzah that's under good hashkacha isn't chametz. But there is an idea of when the Shmira must begin from. Meaning, when does a person have to be watching this stuff in order to ensure that it is, in order to ensure that it's A, not going to be chametz, and B, used for the purpose of the Seder. So Shmura Matzah, it's called Shmura Matzah because it's what we call Shmira Mishas Katsira. The Shmira from the time of cutting. That's already mentioned in the... I put the spot here. Let me just make sure I got that right. The Shulchan Aruch does mention various options when it comes to the... So it says it says in Shulchan Aruch Achitim, the grains that are used for Matzos Mitzvah, which have to be Lishma, the Mishnah Berurah points out, have to be for the purpose of the Mitzvah, so it's best to watch them so that no water falls upon them already from the time of Kitzir, from the time that it's cut. So that's what our Shmur Matzah is watched from, all the way from that period. What we, or at least from the time of grinding, that already is a later time, which is known as matzos pshutos, the plain matzos that you buy in a store are that. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying you really should be getting what we call shmura matzah. If you can't get that, so then you could use regular matzah. So that's what we would say for this year. You should do whatever you can to get shmura matzah. If you don't have available, so let me know. We have our own order in. We are able to help you out. We will be able to help you out if you need a couple of matzos. And if one absolutely, whatever reason, can't get Shmur Matzah, so then one could be Yotze at their Seder with regular matzah. With you know, the regular Manischewitz, whatever matzah that's not called Matzah Shmura. Not getting into the regular, whether hand Shmura versus machine Shmura, for the purpose of this year and for this year, we'll call those the same. I put down dairy here. Why I put down dairy? Because if a person is ill for the Seder, so a person shouldn't feel obligated, or a person is ill in preparation before leading up to the Seder, a person should not feel obligated to make a tremendous, huge shulchan, meal for the Seder. I would, that might be a recommended thing every year in order to make sure the meal keeps moving, to not have such a big meal over the course of the Seder, especially particularly, you have a lot of matzah, you have enough maror, you don't necessarily need so much of a large meal. But particularly this year, a person should not feel guilty if they don't put together a huge meal for the Seder. I will tell the story Rabbi Rothwax told me, who is a rabbi in Teaneck, where my in-laws go. So he told me a couple of years ago that he interned in West Orange. And the rabbi at the time that he interned there was the son-in-law of Rav Yaakov Weinberg, Rav Noach Weinberg from Eishes Torah. Rav Yaakov Weinberg was the Rosh Hashiv of Ner Yisrael at the time. So this son-in-law of Rav Weinberg told him that the first time of the year he got married and was having Seder at his father-in-law's house for the first time, all of a sudden comes Shulchan Orech, and they bring out like cream cheese. Like they brought out some type of dairy dish to have for their Seder. This was... One second, was it Rav Yaakov Weinberg or was Rav Ruderman, actually? I think it was Rav Ruderman, I'm sorry. He's the son-in-law of Rav Ruderman, I believe. I'm not sure I've got the name, but it was Rav Ruderman Seder, that's at least where we heard this from, that Rav Ruderman, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, brought out dairy to be eaten at the Seder, to which the son-in-law said to him, "What's going on here? You know, you're not having meat at the Seder?" He says, "Meat at the Seder at 11 o'clock at night? Well, that's way too heavy for me. I don't want to have meat now." So there actually is no requirement to have meat, at least no requirement for us, Bizman Hazeh, to have meat at the Seder. So a person should not feel obligated to go all out to make sure that they have a large Seder meal, especially if a person is not feeling well and won't be able to eat any of it anyways. Two other things to point out for this year, Morid HaTal, that we will not be davening Tefillas Tal unless things change substantially. Substantially in the next couple of weeks, it seems like we will not be saying Morid HaTal together. As far as I can tell, that means that we would switch to Morid HaTal at the same time, at Musaf. I was thinking that maybe there's a reason that we would, maybe if we're not davening with the minyan, we would say Morid HaTal already from the night of Pesach. It doesn't seem to me that way. If I discover otherwise, I'll let you know. But it seems like Morid HaTal, we would switch over from Meshiva Ruach to Morid HaTal at Musaf on the first day of Pesach, as we always do. We'll just be missing the announcement beforehand. And then finally, the issue of haircuts I threw out here. We generally have a halacha not to get haircuts on Chol HaMoed. There are a few exceptions, some of which is if a person was absolutely, positively unable to get a haircut leading up to Pesach. So it is conceivable that between the first day, between Erev Pesach and Chol HaMoed Pesach, the barbershops might open. And a person who was absolutely unable to get a haircut before Pesach might then be able to get one. If that's the case, that actually would be a case for a heter to get a haircut on Chol HaMoed. If it's a little bit later than that. So it doesn't seem like there's any heter to get a haircut during the absolute period of Sfira. Meaning Sfira there's from beginning of Pesach until Lag BaOmer, and then there's from Rosh Chodesh Iyar, what we call second half sphere, from Rosh Chodesh Iyar until Rosh Chodesh Sivan, right? So during that, the period in between, so and for Ashkenazim at least, this is a stringency for Spartan, but for Ashkenazim, one has the right to switch from year to year, whether they're doing what we call the first half of sphere or the second half of sphere. So that being the case, a person could theoretically say, this year I'm keeping second half sphere in order to accommodate a haircut before Rosh Chodesh Iyar in the days right after Pesach. The other thing to add in is that Rosh Chodesh Iyar this year falls out on a Friday. That being the case, that is a day that is permissible to get haircuts no matter what. So that's also something that might help out in that department for a person who is not able to get a haircut before Yontif. Okay, so those are a couple of things, lists of things that I wanted to share. Next week, next Wednesday night, I am planning... Oh, I see, one second. If one were having dairy, would they still have to have the Zroa? I believe so. The Zroa is part of the Seder plate, so the Zroa would still be on the Seder plate, but you can but that would just be on the table. And the Seder plate itself probably serves as enough of a hecker, as enough of a distinction to be, and you're not allowed to eat it anyways. So that could stay on the table, and the rest of the people can eat dairy. Because we probably will not be in shul next Shabbos for the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, I think we'll do the early Shabbos HaGadol Drasha a week from tonight. And the topic is the art of the kula. I think that's sort of the hashkafic side of tonight's shir. I mean, tonight's shir, we went through and said a lot of ways that we were going to be lenient this year because of necessity. So that makes one think. So wait a second, does that mean that we're like doing things worse this year, or we should feel bad about the way we're doing it this year? So I don't think so. That's the punchline. But we'll discuss. I want to discuss that next week. I think that is a appropriate topic, really, for all Pesachs. These kinds of questions come up for people, but certainly for this year, I think that would be an interesting thing to discuss. So that's another thing different from this year's Pesach than other year's Pesach. Every year on the Shabbos for Pesach, we give a Shabbos HaGadol Drasha and Shul. This year, we'll be doing it a little bit early, but on Zoom. All right, so thank you everybody for coming. It's a Zoom record for me in terms of attendees. Any questions, comments, observations? I'm still here if you want to check in, and obviously I'm available if you have any questions that you want to bring up privately.